So now it's official. So last week we started Perek Tes Vav, and we saw Avshalom's rebellion really shift into high gear against David HaMelech. We saw David's. David being kind of paralyzed, even as Avshalom is really pretty clearly aiming towards rebellion. Avshalom getting the 11 Shvatim on his side by saying David's, you know, too nice to Yehuda. Then Avshalom gets Yehuda on his side by saying that David's too nice to the other Shvatim. You know, Avshalom runs around looking like a prince, which makes him seem very impressive. But then he comes to the common man, which makes them all very touched. Avshalom is picking up on the fact that there seems to not be, David's justice seems to have gotten soft, and that allows him to find people who are very upset with the judgment they're getting, right? Sometimes you have a compromise, nobody's happy. And we really left off with David leaving Yerushalayim. We kind of noted last point, I think we had, was from the Ralbag, who notes that while Avshalom is galloping around with his horses and his chariot and his riders, right? So the Navi had said that David left v'chol beiso biraglav. So one way you could read the pasuk is that everybody followed David, but the Ralbag read it as understanding that everybody is walking out on foot. And we're certainly going to see that's definitely the case. We're going to see later on in the parak here today that they're actually walking out barefoot. But you can't help but notice the contrast between David and Avshalom, where Avshalom is coming into Yerushalayim. He's the new king. He's on the chariot. And David is the one leaving Yerushalayim, and he's there on foot. So what we're going to see really today, so as David leaves Yerushalayim, he's going to meet three different meetings as he leaves Yerushalayim. We'll see those three. We'll also look at the Perek in Tehillim, the third Perek in Tehillim, right? When David flees from Avshalom, to see some of what's going through his mind over there. And I think one kind of point that we'll really take away from the Shir today is we're going to see really going back to the roots. You know, as David is leaving Yerushalayim, we're going to go back to the roots of David. We're going to go back to the roots of David's family, and we're going to see contrast between David and some of the failed leaders of Sefer Shmuel. The punishment that David is getting for David and for Uriah and Bathsheba is finally shifting into high gear. We saw last week, there's almost a sense of relief as David shifts from the paralysis as somebody who knows that he deserves what's coming to him. Finally, after it happens, he's able to shift into action. And like the David we see, you know, who's no longer king, is much more resembles the David that we knew from his whole career than the David we've seen in Perek Yud Gimel and Perek Yud Dalet. The paralyzed David with Tamar and Amnon, and then with Amnon and Avshalom, and then Avshalom's rebellion. We're gonna see like David, you know, back to his roots. So scroll up one second. Right, so the last thing the Navi had told us as they left was that he went with his servants and the Krasi and the Plasi and the Gitim, 600 men. It's unclear who exactly they are. It seems like some sort of elite palace guard. And we can't help but notice, by the way, 600 men, we talk about going back to the roots. Well, here's an example. When's the last time we've seen David running around with 600 men? David had 600 men when he was on the run from Shaul. That was his original core band of 600. So it's like we're running it back. Everything is back to where it was before. Of course, you know, David, we can imagine the personal anguish, right? Back then, he was on the run from his father-in-law who wanted to kill him. Now he's on the run from his son who wants to kill him. So the leader of these Gitim is this person, this kind of mysterious man by the name of Itai Hagiti. Now, what do we know about Itai Hagiti? He's the leader of these people. When David fights his final battle against Avshalom, he's going to divide his army into three groups. One group will be led by Yoav. One group will be led by Yoav's brother, Avishai. But the third battalion is going to be led by Itai Hagiti. So this man is a major military leader in David's army. We know two other things about him. One, David is going to call him a Nachri. So that you could translate that as literally a Gentile. On the other hand, Itai pretty clearly seems Jewish. I mean, Itai in Pasuk Aleph is going to say to David, Chai Hashem, right? He's going to invoke the Yud Kei Vav Kei. So almost all the Mefarshim assume that Itai is a ger. Probably he was a Plishti. Now he has converted to Judaism. Abarbanel points out that the Radak thinks that this Itai converted a long time ago. Abarbanel points out that Rashi seems to think that Itai is a much more recent ger. It's kind of fresh off the boat. But either way, we have this ger tzedek Itai Hagiti, who wants to come together with David, and he's the leader of these gitim. So look at these psukim, and right away we're going to see something strikingly familiar. So the king says to Itai, why are you coming with us? Shuv v'shev im hamelach. Go back to the king. Rashi says that David is calling who the king? Who's the king right here? The king is Avshalom. You know, the Navi never calls Avshalom a king, but David is going to refer to Avshalom as the king. I'm on the run. I've been thrown out. I accept what's happened. Now Avshalom is the king. Don't go with me. Go back to him. Ki nachriata v'gam go la'talem kamecha. You don't even belong here. You're originally from Gat. You can go back to Gat. You don't belong with me at all. Why are you going into exile with me, right? You should go back, right? Ani holeich al asher ani holeich. I'm going to go wherever I'm going. I don't even know where I'm going. Shuv v'hashev v'sachach imach chesed v'yemes. Go back, and that will be considered as a chesed. And then Itai responds to the king, and notice, right, again and again and again in this parak. The parak refers to David as the king. Right, it's like the Navi wants to bend over backwards to remind us that even as David is being thrown out of Yerushalayim, right, it's Dafka in his lowest moment when the punishment finally comes that we see that David truly is a melech. So Itai responds to the king and he says, "Vayomar Chai Hashem, Yudke Vavke, V'chei Adoni HaMelech, Ki B'makom Asher Yashem Adoni HaMelech, In L'mavas In L'chayim Kisham Ye Avdecha. I will be with you, right, to life or to death." And then David tells Itai, okay, so come with us. And so he does. So we can't help but notice what dramatic parallel is there here. It's being drawn between the ger who says, I'm going to come with you. And David is saying, don't. We're back to Rus, right? We're back to Rus and Naomi. We're going back to the roots of David's family. David, of course, who is the descendant of Rus, and David, who is seen as the descendant of Naomi, right? Because at the end of the Megillah, Naomi raises the child, so she, you know, the child is both considered the child of Naomi and the child of Rus. And now things have come back full circle. And even if we think about what's happening, Rus was out in the east, right? And Rus and Naomi were out in the east in Moab, and they're coming back to the land of Yehuda. And now the opposite is happening. David is going into exile. He's leaving the land of Yehuda. He's leaving Yerushalayim, right? And he's traveling to the east. So we're once again back to the roots. But it's also, you know, we see that in moments like these, there seems to be a pattern maybe. When Bnei Yisrael have collapsed, the leadership has collapsed. There's a lack of chesed. We have sons who are, you know, going after fathers. Well, for the second time, redemption is coming from what might have seemed like the most unlikely place imaginable. The place of redemption is coming from the Ger Tzedek. And that was the chesed that Rus showed to Naomi. And now, right, everything comes around that David, Rus's descendant, is the recipient of that same chesed from a new generation of Ger. All right, so we could think of like this parak, even as the bill of punishment is coming due for David, or what happened with Uriah and Bathsheba, at the same time, the schar, you know, the reward bill is coming as well for everything that his ancestor Rus did for Naam. Okay, so the parak now continues. That's meeting number one. Now we have meeting number two. This one's really, really interesting. So that tells us everybody's crying. So they get to Nachal Kidron, right? We've been to Yerushalayim, so we know as you leave Yerushalayim. So you go down into the valley to Nachal Kidron, then you go up to Har HaZeitim, and then after Har HaZeitim, you're out to the desert, right? You get past Har HaZeitim, you have Ma'al Adumim, and you're just straight there into Midbar Yudah, going all the way down to the Yam HaMelech, right? So David is like in his last moments of, you know, being in like the world of civilization. So they're down in the Kidron, right? They're facing the Derech HaMidbar. They're on the road to the desert, which we can imagine the symbolism for David, right? It's not just that they're in exile, but they're on their way to wilderness. They don't know where they're going to go. They don't know what's going to happen next. David, who had been in the Midbar for so many years when he was being pursued by Shaul, now it's happening again. Let's see what happens at Pasuk Chaf Tal. So the Navi tells us, So Tzadok comes with Levim bearing the Aron, right? The Aron it's in a tent in Yerushalayim. It's been there since David brought it with him in Perek Vav of Sefer Shmuel. That, the whole episode, which ended with the split between David and Michal. So David is leaving the Aron behind. So Tzadok, and who's a Kohen, descendant of Pinchas, and the Levim, who the job of Levim has always been to carry the Aron, so they carry it with them. They want to bring the Aron together with David. And Evyasar, who is the Kohen Gadol, is coming along with them as well. Evyasar, he's also a veteran fugitive. Evyasar was the only surviving Kohen from the massacre at Nov, when Shaul wiped out all the Kohanim of Nov. So he's a descendant of Eli, who the rest of that house has been wiped out. He's been serving as a Kohen Gadol. So he comes as well. But there's something very odd over here. Evyasar is the Kohen Gadol, but he doesn't get mentioned first, right? First Tzadok gets mentioned. If we only had this pasuk, that wouldn't be such a big deal, because we could explain that Tzadok is the one in charge of the Levium who have the Aron, and then Evyasar walks in the rear. That wouldn't be so crazy. But then, Vayomer HaMelech leTzadok, Hashev v'Asarot Elokim ha'ir b'memtzachim b'nei Hashem ha'shivani harani yafso v'esnaveyu. David tells Tzadok to bring the Aron back. It's a little surprising. I get it that Tzadok is, you know, the one directly in charge of the Aron, but the Kohen Gadol is the one who calls the shots. If David wants to send the Aron back, he really should be talking to Evyasar. Now, you still might say, okay, well, it's not such a... I guess David just gave the direct orders to the man directly responsible. However, it's clear that something very odd is happening because of Pasuk Chav Zayin, right? In Pasuk Chav Hey and Pasuk Chav Vav, David tells Tzadok, send the Aron back to Yerushalayim. And in a second, we'll talk about the importance of that. And David says, you know, if Hashem wants me to come back, I'll come back. If not, I won't. But then David talks again in Pasuk Chav Zayin. And whenever you have a case in Tanakh, right, where one person talks and then he talks again, well, what that means is that he spoke. Then there was silence because the other person should have said or done something. And therefore, in response to that silence, person A speaks again. So it seems clear that David tells Tzadok to go back, and Tzadok does not want to go back. So David speaks up again in Pasuk Chav Zayin, and he tells him, look, I told you to go back to Yerushalayim to bring the Aron with you. You don't want to go back, so I'll tell you what, go back to the city, and don't worry, you'll still be able to serve me, because you and your sons will be able to serve as a spy now. And once Tzadok gets the sense that he's going to be able to be useful and productive in the counter-rebellion, then he agrees to go back to Yerushalayim. And then the Navi tells us at the end, Vayashev Tzadok ve'Evyasar, they brought the Aron back. And notice that Tzadok comes first, and Evyasar comes second. So what on earth is going on? Evyasar is the Kohen Gadol, but consistently, Tzadok is showing up first, and David is talking to him and not to Evyasar. So Rashi comments with this, and Rashi says, we see that what happened, Oso Hayom Nistalik Min HaKuhuna. Evyasar clearly was removed from being the Kohen Gadol. Now, there's no such thing as being totally permanently removed as Kohen Gadol. It means that he wasn't able to serve as Kohen Gadol. Why not? Shesha'al be'urim v'tumim v'lo ne'eneh. He asked a question of the Urim v'tumim and Eviasar did not get a response. V'nichnas Tzadok tachta. And Tzadok becomes elevated as a new Kohen Gadol. So now we exit this passage. Rashi has sensed from the Pesukim that we have two Kohanim Gedolim, and Tzadok is really the preeminent one. Tzadok is like the active Kohen Gadol by the end of the stage, while Eviasar is the veteran, but Hashem is not answering. So we need to figure out what is the significance. Why, of all points in time, is it this moment that Hashem is changing who is the Kohen Gadol? Now, David's been king. We talked last week for how long David's been king for. I think the pshat is probably around 25 years or so, if we say like the Ralbag, that this is happening 40 years after David was first anointed as a teenager. So we figure, why now is the Kohen Gadol being replaced? So, first of all, let's realize the house of Eli is supposed to be fired from being Kohen Gadol, right? That was the very, very beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Hashem had said, I am abandoning the house of Eli. So we have the house of Eli, the house of David, right? We saw the prophecies to both. When David was told he was going to get punished, it was strikingly similar to the Nevuah that was given to the house of Eli. I chose you. I chose your house. I chose your descendants. How could you be so ungrateful to everything that I did for you? And here are the consequences. Here's what's going to happen as a result. So the same moment where David is being thrown out of Yerushalayim, where David is losing the Malchus, that is the same moment where, at the same time, the house of Eli is finally losing the Kohuna Gadol, right? These two are coming to fruition in parallel. However, let's look at what David's response is to what happens to him. Because the Navi, this is, I think, really, really fascinating, at the moment when Eli's household loses Kohuna Gadola is the moment when David specifically shows the contrast between him and the house of Eli. Because what was the core mistake the house of Eli? Well, we learned this a long time ago, but we go back to the Pesukim in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, right? So remember, the Navi had told Eli, I'm going to bring a new Kohen or a reliable Kohen. He's going to build a bias Ne'eman for me, and he'll walk before my anointed. You know, there is no anointed yet. There was no king in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, but that was the Nevuah. Happens to be, this is coming true right now, right? The Kohen Ne'eman, who is going to walk before my anointed, is happening right now. It's happening as David is being thrown out of Yerushalayim, as in Tzadok is being promoted. But why were they fired? It was because they had a totally warped perspective of the Mishkan and the Ribono Shel Olam. Remember, they thought the Mishkan was really there to serve them, and not the reverse. They weren't there to serve Hashem. They were there to just get food from the Karbanos. The Aron Kodesh was something to be used as a weapon. The power of God was something to be manipulated. When they fight against the Plishtim, they lose the first battle. So what was the response that they had? They said, let's bring the Aron Kodesh from the Mishkan to the battle. They send the sons of Eli, Chafni and Pinchas, bring the Aron to the battle, and they expect that now we're going to have to win. We have brought Hashem with us, and that is going to give us the victory. And that was the totally warped perspective they had, right? Their attitude as Kohanim was, you know, don't ask what can God do for me. Don't ask what I can do for God. Ask what God can do for me. And, you know, to put it mildly, the Kohen is supposed to do Avodah Al-Delah, right? He's supposed to serve Hashem. So that was the end of the line for them as Kohanim Gedolim, stealing mead, being perverse in the Mishkan. But it was symbolized most sharply by their attitude towards the Aron, that they looked at the Aron as a tool. And they looked at it as the physical presence of the Ribono Shel Olam, the same exact way that the Plishtim did. We understand why the Plishtim think of the Aron that way. They're idolaters. But for the Kohanim to think of it that way was really totally off base. What does David do over here? They bring the Aron. The king is going into exile. So the Kohen Gadol is going to come with him to exile, and we're going to bring the Aron alongside. And what does David say? Let's look at Pasuk Chafei and Pasuk Chavav. Hashev es Aron ha'elokim ha'ir. Bring the Aron back. Im tachin b'nei Hashem, v'ashivani, Hashem wants to bring me back, he can bring me back. Hashem is going to decide what he wants to do. So let's unpack it. David realizes, first of all, he doesn't need a box for Hashem to be with him. He can go into exile. The Aron may not be there, but Hashem can be with him. If Hashem wants, Hashem can bring me back. I don't need the box. And David also is, right, he's accepting the consequences. He's accepting the din of what's happened to him. He said, it's all up to Hashem. I can't manipulate, right? I can't say, oh, you know, I have an army after me. I'm drastically outnumbered. Wouldn't it be helpful to keep the Aron along so that I can use that as I can make Hashem be with me as a weapon? No, that is totally alien to David. Hashem does what he wants. If Hashem wants me to succeed, he'll bring me back. If he doesn't, then he will do kasher tov be'ina. Right? So David is accepting the judgment, tziduk hadin, without losing hope, though. Right? It's a very delicate balance, you know, accepting the judgment, tziduk hadin, without losing hope. When we talked about Eli, we said Eli himself was very righteous, went too far in the other direction. You know, he was told what's going to happen. He never did tshuva. He said, okay, if that's going to happen, that's going to happen. David can strike the balance. He has the proper fear and awe of Ribbono Shel Olam, right? He's not going to look at that as something to manipulate, something for him to submit to. At the same time, though, he has hope. It always is possible for him to bring me back, right? So we see the Navi at David's lowest moment, right? We're seeing the contrast, though. You want to know why David is going to return to be the king again, while the house of Eli is never going to come back. It's because at the end of the day, David can learn from his mistakes. He can learn from the mistakes of Klal Yisrael. He can do tshuva. He can turn things around. He has the proper attitude towards Hashem. He has the proper yira, and that is going to allow Hashem to decide that it's okay to bring him back. Okay, so that's meeting number two. Now let's go on and look at meeting number three. So David Olat Bamale, and let's just we should appreciate the fact these people are gonna make a big deal. The sons of Eviasar and Tzadok, who are now in Yerushalayim, they are gonna be very important. You know, so David has not lost hope religiously, but he's also not lost hope militarily. Right? It's David's MO. You put in your Hishtadlos 100%, even as you realize at the end of the day it's up to Hashem. So he's not gonna just walk out of Yerushalayim and then say, look, if Hashem wants to bring me back, he will. He'll say that, but at the same time, David's going to place the spies, right? The Kohanim are going to be there, the sons of the Kohanim. He's going to have the intelligence network, the men behind the scenes, and that's going to play a key role in the Prakim going forward. So the Perek concludes with one more meeting. Now, David had been at the Nachal Kidron, right? He was at the valley when the Aron came to him. Now David Olad and Maale Hazesim. Now they're going up to Harazesim. We can really visualize this. Olad Uboche is crying. Rosh Lo Chafui. His head is covered in mourning. Hu Holech Yachef. He's going barefoot. V'chol Amasherito Chafuisha Rosho Valu Alo Bocha. Right, they're ascending and they're crying. It's a mournful scene. Then David is told, "The David Higilimor, Achitofel Bakoshrin of Shalom." So David's looking around. Where is his advisor? Where is Achitofel, the greatest of the advisors? Apparently, he is in league with Avshalom. We're going to return to this relationship next week. For now, let's just recall that the pshat is that Achitofel is the grandfather of Batsheva. The pshat is also that Batsheva does not yet have a son who's been chosen as the crown prince. So Achitofel is still furious about what's happened to his granddaughter. There's no benefit to him because there's no Shlomo HaMelech around yet. So he's gotten in with Avshalom. Vayomer David sakelna es atzas Achitofel Hashem. Right, so he davens Hashem to destroy the advice of Achitofel. We will see that tefillah definitely will be accepted. Next week we'll talk about how soon that tefillah was accepted, and it's possible. It's possible that sometimes getting your tefillah accepted can think your tefillah can be accepted, but not always in the way that you want. Sometimes it's possible. We don't always get what we're davening for, and sometimes we may not wish that we got what we davened for. But we'll learn about that next week in session. All right, last couple of psukim of the parak. So Vayhi David Bal Harosh. So David gets to the top of the mountain. Asher Yishtachav Hashem Lelokim. That's where you'd often would bow down to Hashem. We can understand why, because somebody who's approaching Yerushalayim, you get to Har HaZeisim, right? Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. You have the mountains all around. So the person would, you ascend Har HaZeisim, and now you look down, and the first time you can see the city of Yerushalayim. So what happens at that moment? And we, coincidence of coincidences. At that moment, suddenly, Hinei Likraso Hushai Ha'arki. So this person, Hushai Ha'arki, who is described as David's old friend, another very intimate advisor. So Hushai Ha'arki shows up, right? Coincidence of coincidences. The moment that David gets to the place where he used to bow down to Hashem, he bumps into Hushai Ha'arki, who's going to be a pivotal figure in defeating Avshalom's rebellion and in destroying neutralizing the advice of Achitophel, right? So we may not realize it yet, but as so often happens, the way Hashkafa works, with the benefit of hindsight, we can see that in many ways, Hashem actually answers David's tefillah one pasuk later. David has no idea this is the case, but Hushai showing up right now is exactly Hashem putting in motion the ultimate seeds of redemption. You know, even as right now, it's the lowest moment. He's barefoot, he's crying, his head is covered, he's on his way out. Even before he leaves, right? Before he leaves Yerushalayim, before he leaves being able to see Yerushalayim, Hashem has already put the seeds of the Geula into action. Now, Hushai Arki, right? He's also has a torn garment. He also has earth on his head. He's also in mourning. Now he wants to go with David. Now, David accepted Itai Hagiti, the really strong military general with his soldiers. So when he argued strongly enough that he's going to stay with David, David said yes. But Hushai is an old man, and now David's done. Right? We're done taking more people along with us on the ride. Yemelo David, imavarta iti vayisa lai lemasa. You're not going to help, right? And you see, by the way, David able to talk to somebody in a way that they can understand, right? David earlier told Tzadok, he said, go back. And Tzadok didn't want to go back. He wanted to stay with David. He was loyal to his king. There's a reason why Tzadok is going to be chosen as a Kohen Gadol. David realized that, and David said, okay, go back to Yerushalayim, but you're going to help me, right? You'll go back and you'll help me out as a spy. So David's able to, get Tzadok to do it the way he wants. Now David tells Hushai, go back, and he realizes that Hushai is so loyal to him. He says, Davka, as a sign of your loyalty, you should go back because you can't help me on the road. And then, right, he says, what? I've always been a servant of the king, right? I'm not really a servant of David. I'm a servant of the institution of the king. So David was king. They are the king. I'm loyal to the king. The king is whoever's wearing the crown, sitting on the throne. So ani avadacha. Right now, but you're king, you're servant of Shalom. You will defeat the advice of Achitophel, which we'll see a little later on. And David says, look, there's a whole plan that's been put in place. And it's amazing. David, who's been paralyzed, weak, and passive, all of a sudden, he's just jury-rigged the whole system, right? We have like an elite system of spies that's come together in just a few psukim from people just showing up as David is on his way out of Yerushalayim. The opportunities are coming to David, but David is taking full advantage. He tells Hushai, I have Tzadok in place. I have Abyasar in place. Their sons are in place. Any intelligence you have, you'll give to the sons, and that way we'll be able to be in touch. And then the parak concludes with Hushai going back to the city, the Avshalom Yavo Yerushalayim. And this is really interesting. Yavo Hushai Roed David Ha'ir, he goes to the city. Avshalom Yavo Yerushalayim. It's like the Navi wants us to, that last line, Yerushalayim, is used specifically, right? Not the city anymore, but it's Yerushalayim. We have the contrast, right, once again. David is on his way out. Avshalom is coming, not to the generic city, though. Avshalom is coming to Yerushalayim. Okay, so we see David then on his way out. We see David contrasted with Avshalom. We see David contrasted with the house of Eli. Truth is, we also see David contrasted with the other failed leader of Sefer Shmuel, Shaul HaMelech. When Shaul HaMelech got the message that Hashem wanted him out as king, what was his defining weakness? He could never accept that. David realizes what Hashem wants. He realizes this is coming min Hashemayim. He's accepted the punishment, and he leaves, right? He walks out of Yerushalayim. He doesn't cling to power. He leaves with the hope that Hashem can always bring him back. Okay, so now let's just look for a few minutes at David's own words, right? Mizrol David bivarcho mipnei Avshalom bino. And it's a very short parak, but obviously extremely powerful. So David begins by saying, Hashem marabutza, right? Rabim kamim alai. Hashem has, David has so many enemies, so many against him. Rabim omrim lenafshi, ein yeshuva salo, velokim. Salam. Many enemies, many against him, and many have said that he will have no redemption from Hashem. Everyone knows, all David's enemies know, that the playbook David is hoping for is for Hashem to have his back, as has always happened before. And David says, this time they're saying that I have no hope. Now, we have to ask, by the way, I mean, are these people idiots? Like, Achitofel is not a fool. One thing we can say about Achitofel, he's not a fool. And anybody who's been following David's career, you have to be blind to not realize, as David escaped again and again from Shaul, that Hashem was the one saving David, right? The Hashkacha was something that was obvious. So how could David's enemies so casually say, Ein Yeshua Salo Velokim? Right? We said this whole parak is like a sequel, like a rerun of David on the run from Shaul. Well, we know how that ended up. So how could it be that now they could once again say, Ein Yeshua Salo Velokim Sal? So Rashi answers it. Rashi says there's something new that's happened over here. Ein Yeshua Salo Velokim Sal. You see what happens when I type this at 1 a.m. Lefi sheba al eshes ish. What has changed? They say what's changed is that David has sinned. We saw this a few times with David and Bathsheba, that Rashi seemed pretty open to David either technically or ethically having violated adultery. Hand it over here. David has sinned, and therefore, this time, there is no hope for him. So the way Rashi is reading the parak and reading the mindset of David versus his enemies, and let's remember, it's Achitofel, the grandfather of Bathsheba, who presumably knows what happened, who says, this time Hashem is going to abandon David. So for David to maintain his bitachon throughout this whole episode over here, it's not just that he has to have faith in Hashem, but he also has to have faith in the power of tshuva, right? It's a different test than the test from last time. And despite the fact, lefi shebal eshesh, despite the fact that he has sinned, David still is able to have hope. He's not sure, right? He told Tzadok, he said, if Hashem doesn't want me to come back, I'm going to be gone. He doesn't know what's going to happen, but right, there still always is hope. Right? And the truth is, we'll skip for a second to the end of the parak, because the enemies are saying, Ein Yeshua Salo Velokim, that David has no Yeshua from Hashem. David directly answers them at the very end with a very famous pasuk. This is the context of it. Lashem HaYeshua Anocha Berchasach HaSalah. So David comes back to this idea of Yeshua. Hashem always has the Yeshua. I forgot, it may have been the Dat Mikra who points out. There's a subtle difference. What do the enemies say? The enemies say, there's no Yeshua from Elokim, right? The generic God. David never talks about Elohim. David always talks about Yoke Bavke. It's always Hashem, right? It's always that intimate relationship. It's always the love. It's always the Rachamim. That's always how David is able to relate to Hashem. Even as he also has the Yira, right? Which we saw in this parak. We saw the awe and the respect, but the love is there as well, and the faith and the hope, right? Now, what's David's response to these people? Ata Hashem Magen Badi, right? You've been my shield. You've held up my head. Koli El Hashem Akrav, Ayanin Mihar Kasha Sela. He answers me. Something important here, by the way. Ayanin, where does he answer me from? He answers me from Mehar Kadsho, from his holy mountain. What's the holy mountain? Har Tzion, right? Yerushalayim. David has left Yerushalayim, but as we saw in our parak, despite the fact that he is not physically proximate to the Aron Kodesh, David says that doesn't matter. There are no limits to the power of Hashem. I can be in Galus, and Hashem can still answer me from Har Kodesh, right? From Yerushalayim. Rav Amnon Bazak in the DBM points out, glossed over this point before, but that when David sends the Aron back to Yerushalayim, so that really is the first point in history where Yerushalayim has been kind of officially established as, you know, Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. You know, it's one thing for David to conquer the city and set it up as his capital and bring in the Aron, right? There are plenty of political reasons why that's advantageous, as we learned when we talked about it. It's in the middle, it's between all the Shvatim, but once you leave Yerushalayim, but you say the Aron needs to stay there, so now David's really putting his money where his mouth is, that in fact, I meant it when we established this as Yerushalayim Yerkodesh. And here in this parak in Tehillim, as David leaves Yerushalayim, he says, Vayanim Har Kodesh, David can, Hashem can answer me from Har Tzion. And then beautifully says, Ani Shachavti V'Shana, I can go to sleep, I can wake up, every night, every morning. I'm on the run, but Hashem has my back every night, every morning. Lo ira mirivavosam. I'm not going to be afraid. David's outnumbered. You know, Avshalom's army is much bigger, but David is not worried, because it all goes back to that core idea. Right now, this is like the ultimate message of all of Sefer Shmuel, going back to Chana, going back to Yonasan, going back to Shmuel and David. Basically, what all the good guys in Sefer Shmuel share in common is that core recognition that the numbers don't matter. Rivos Am doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it all comes down to the ultimate power of Hashem. Kuma Hashem, Hosheni Elokai, Ki Kisos Eskolai Ve'lachi, you've beaten my enemies before, Shnei Shirisham Shibarta, right? You've struck the wicked, you can do it again, you can save me. And then Hashem, David concludes, Lashem Ha'yeshuva, okay, fine. So we see the expression of hope and bitachon. But let's talk for 1 minute to close about the very, very end of the parakodesh, where David says, Al amcha berchasach asal, may your bracha be on the nation. The whole parak until this point is totally focused on David. It's all me, right? There are two groups of people here. There's David, and there's David's enemies. And there's no one else, right? I mean, there's Hashem, David, and the enemies. That's it. All of a sudden, David invokes, Al amcha berchasach asal, may your bracha be on your nation. So the Malbim writes about this. He says, you know why David has to talk about the Am over here? Because David is heading into civil war. He says, there's now going to be a war against all of Am Yisrael. So David wants to survive. David wants to be saved. David wants the wicked to be smitten. No question about that. But he says, he doesn't want to have a whole civil war against all of Am Yisrael. So he davens to Hashem, and it's like, you know, he wants to have his cake and eat it too. He wants Hashem to save him, but he wants Hashem's bracha to remain on all of Am Yisrael. Now the Malbim says this is actually going to happen. They're going to fight the last battle, and, you know, we'll get there in a couple of weeks, and we'll see what's going to happen, but Yoav is going to go out of his way to minimize total casualties by ending the battle as quickly as possible. But this is the last point. We see David, right? Our parak has been calling David the Melech over and over and over again. You know, the moment when he leaves Yerushalayim is the moment when we keep on calling him a king. And maybe it all comes down to this point as well. One more contrast between David and Avshalom. Avshalom looks at the kingship as something which is just there for him, right? The power and the pleasure, that's all he's ever wanted, and that's totally what he's going for. Right, the way that, you know, the house of Eli looked at the institution of Kahuna, it was just a vehicle for pleasure. That's the way that Avshalom looks at the Malchus. The minute that David heard that Avshalom was coming, so immediately he said, we have to leave now, because if we don't, Avshalom can destroy the whole city. David shows a concern for the Am, the king, right? King has two responsibilities. He has to be totally loyal to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he has to be totally loyal to his people, right? Being king is not about me. It's about Am Yisrael. And David concludes his parak here. He's leaving. He's not putting up a fight because he doesn't want to see Yerushalayim destroyed. David does not want war. Not even sure what his strategy is going to be. His heart is not going to be in the fight at all, as we see going forward. David doesn't want to say civil war. And that's his Tehillat Hashem at the end. Somehow, Hashem, can it be that can the redemption be there, right? Hoshieni Elokai. David wants the personal redemption. At the end of the day, he wants the national redemption as well. Lashem Hayeshua al Amcha Berchasach Salam. May the bracha extend and cover not even just me, but not even me at all. At the end of the day, it's really about al Amcha Berchasach Salam. That's where David's focus seems to be. So as we see the next couple of weeks, when the civil war is going to really kick in, and David is going to be, like almost the paralyzed version of David is going to return in many ways. So that's one, I think, perspective for us to keep in mind. What does it mean to be king, to be loyal to your people, right? But then to be confronted with civil war. How do you deal with that? And the answer might just be this exact parak of Tehillim, where David might just say, look, Hashem, I don't see a solution. I'm going to do my best. But at the end of the day, I'm going to turn it over to you and hope and have faith that somehow you can come up with something. Because, me and my strategy were kind of coming up short. All right, so we'll stop here. And so next week, we'll shift the scene back to Yerushalayim as Avshalom comes in, and we'll tackle Perek Zayin. So,
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great
day. Thank you.
Take care. I'll take care.